AWSIsHow.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. We're fundraising here at WMNF, and the fund drive continues to Wednesday. Hopefully, if you're a Radioactivity fan, you'll call in right now and help us reach our goal. Between now and 1 o'clock, we need to hear from 60 more people, and we will reach the goal that we have. We're going to include Midpoint in that today, too. Sean Cannon is here. The commuter is here. We've got some people to thank. Democracy Now! Heard from about 20 people, a little bit short of the 30 people we had hoped to hear from. But thanks to Catherine Cassu from Tampa, she made a $50 contribution during Democracy Now! Thank you, Catherine. By the way, we're going to hear more of Democracy Now! In just a moment, including more of that interview with Victorina Morales, the undocumented immigrant hired by the Trump National Golf Course. She'll be along in just about 3 minutes. BJ Curry, thank you. She and her son listen to Democracy Now! Every morning. They're taking a WMNF t-shirt. Thanks, BJ. And Helen Solomon from Ruskin made a $50 contribution. And Karuna Reef from St. Petersburg made a $50 contribution. Likes Democracy Now! And Sean is here and the commuter is here. Hey, guys.
Hey, hello. Another wonderful day. That's it. Hey, Oliver Mutukidzi, didn't he just recently pass?
He died 2 weeks ago.
Ah, that is such a... that song has a like a Pavlovian effect on me. You know, every time I hear it, I start watering at the mouth.
So, anticipation, breathless anticipation.
Heart be still, yeah. You know. Alan Yosin, Sun City Center, $50 contribution to WMNF. Michelle Robert... Roberge. I know I'm mispronouncing it. I'm sorry. Palm Harbor. And says, thanks for Democracy Now! I love the program and Rob Loride.
Oh, that's nice. That's
another
nice.
That's one who's watering at the mouth with that Pavlovian anticipation. So Mark DeMeo in Port Richey. Love to support the independent news. Very generous. $20.
Thanks, Mark.
There you go. So anyway, thanks to all of them. Well, what do you got, Sean?
I do have some other people to thank. I also want to thank people who have donated food for our volunteers. Thanks to Michelle and everyone at Fado's Family Bakery, located at 5150 North Florida Avenue in Tampa, for their donation of fresh baked Cuban bread to feed our volunteers answering phones. And this morning's coffee donor, Spatty's, is located next to Fado's. Greg and the barista sent over coffee and cream to keep our volunteers powered up. So thank you for that. And another way that you can power our volunteers is by calling in your donations at 813-238-8001, just like Jack Parker did in Sefner with a $25 contribution. And says, Hugh from Dover supports the show, so thank you for that contribution. Also Anonymous from Michigan, $25 donation supporting the show. And Libu Thomas from Riverview says, Democracy Now! Is great, is donating $25. So thank you for that contribution, 813-238-8001.
Well, we've got 60 donations that we've got to raise in the next 2 hours. We hope that you stick around, because we're going to hear two more interesting interviews from Democracy Now! Then we're going to hear an interview about the rise of Hitler in the 1930s and the importance that immigration played in the early 1930s in Germany in riling up Hitler's supporters. We'll hear that interview later on in this hour. But please call us if you always learn something new from listening to WMNF, if you keep up to date with all the big, important topics out there. If you feel like the national news has dropped the ball on President Trump's companies hiring undocumented immigrants, then this interview that you're about to hear is really an important interview for you and certainly for all of us here in the studio. So please call us up. Keep this great radio station alive. There's one call right now. That's good. Let's see if we can get 60 calls in the next 2 hours. Here's our phone number, 813-238-8001. You can also make your contribution online. Now, here's more of that interview that Amy Goodman did with Victorina Morales, who's an undocumented immigrant hired by the Trump National Golf Course, talking about her experience and being told to lie on her employment forms. This is WMNF 88.5 FM.
They didn't have the education to treat us well, to respect us. He doesn't even respect himself. And of course, he doesn't respect us, immigrants. So, but thank you.
Eric Trump,
President Trump's son, tweeted this week, "We have tens of thousands of employees across our properties and have very strict hiring practices. If any employee submitted false documentation in an attempt to circumvent the law, they will be terminated immediately. We take this issue very seriously. This is one of the reasons my father is fighting so hard for immigration reform. The system is broken," Eric Trump said. Can you respond to this, Victorina?
Ellos no hayan como este.
They don't know. We have a proverb in Guatemala. They cannot. You cannot hide the sun with a finger. They're lying. But we're here showing our face in front of everything they're saying. It's a lie. I'm an immigrant. I made my false documents right there.
Now, if you could explain what you mean when you said, "I did the paperwork," are you contending that it was the Trump organization, President Trump's business, that helped you to falsify papers?
Yes, of course. The supervisor helped me. He told me that I had to do the papers over again and that I had to make a new ID in order to be able to keep working there. His cousin took me to a place near Bamberg, and they made my false papers there. The supervisor took the picture. He took the picture in the laundry place, and he asked me for $175. And he told me, when he gave me the document, hide them, because if the police sees them, they can arrest you. So this is the truth. This is what happened. We cannot go on lying. They say that we're lying, that we're thieves, rapists. But no, we're here to work. And they know them. They know that because we were their employees. And that's why I don't tire myself of saying that they are hypocrites, that they are lying. They are the liars.
How many people would you estimate at Bedminster were undocumented? How many of the people who worked for Donald Trump?
When the news came out in December, I stopped going to work because I was the one who gave those news. I was tired of being abused. I said enough. Enough of listening to him on the TV and see how he treats us as migrants. I said, no, I'm going to speak out. I'm going to come forward and I'm going to say that he's a liar. And that's why I'm here, showing my face so that he sees that that we're not liars. I am saying the truth.
Did you receive a certificate from the White House for doing outstanding work for the president, cleaning his room?
Yes, I did. Yes, I have the certificate. It's a document they gave me for having done the best work at the club, golf club of the president. Yes, I got that certificate.
You heard President Trump talking about invaders coming in from over the border and his demand to build a wall over the border. What are your thoughts?
Yes, what I think is that he should stop talking about the wall and that people come forward because there are many people working for him. He has five clubs and they are undocumented.
And what do you think about Eric Trump saying, you know, some people just don't have papers, and where this happens in an organization that has thousands of workers? How high up do you think the knowledge of your not having documents and others not having documents went in Bedminster?
Yes. That information went very high. personas because que no tienen many papeles. People are coming forward. I was undocumented and I was working there. And now there are many people who are being fired who were undocumented and who were working for him because there are 5 clubs who have been firing people.
Victorino Morales, can you talk about when you came to the United States and why you left Guatemala and how you made your way here?
I
came in 1999 from Guatemala. I was with my parents there. I was 7 years old when my father got killed. And then I got married. My husband came in 1999 to this country. And a year after he was here, he sent for me. After we sent money, we made a house, and then they killed my father-in-law in front of my children.
But
when I came to this country, it was 1999, and when I started working in Bedminster for the president till now in 2013, till 2018 when I raised my voice because I got tired.
So I wanted to turn back to Bonnie Watson Coleman, the congressmember from New Jersey who invited Victorino Morales to the State of the Union address. As you listen to Victorino's story, one that you know well now, what are you calling for? A fellow New Jersey Senator, Bob Menendez, says that they will launch an investigation into the Trump Organization's employment practices. What are you doing in the House?
Well, first of all, we have the same letter to the FBI seeking the same investigation because there are many employment violations and other hostile work environment situations, other illegal situations regarding the procuring of fraudulent documents. Victorina right now is an applicant for asylum. I don't know that she told you that. So she's also a material witness, and we think that those issues will protect her from being deported or detained or anything of that nature. But this is this is not an isolated incident in the Trump enterprises. They knew what they were doing. They facilitated people getting, who were not documenting, getting fraudulent documents to put in the file. So it doesn't matter what an Eric Trump or anybody else says right now. They very well knew, and they are lying if they're suggesting in any other way. There are more than 20 people who've already been identified in the same situation as Victorina, and there are probably many more, my understanding, to be identified. This is a pattern and practice of illegal employment activity, of creating a hostile work environment. But even more than that, this is an illustration of using good, decent, hardworking, honest people as pawns for a wall on the border that will serve no good interests, no service interests, and this is a justification for having shut down government for 5 weeks and deprived 800,000 people of their paychecks. This is just an illustration of the corrupt environment in which this administration is functioning.
That's New Jersey Congressmember Bonnie Watson Coleman and Victorino Morales, an undocumented immigrant who worked for 5 years as a housekeeper for Donald Trump at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. After a short break, we'll be joined by Victorino's attorney, Anibal Romero. Stay with us.
And we're going to hear from that attorney in just a moment right here on WMNF in Tampa as we fundraise, trying to raise a lot of money to keep this radio station going over the next 6 days. The fund drive will continue to Wednesday. We have a goal today, though, of trying to raise, trying to hear from about 79 more people, and we will reach the goal. And Arlene Engelhardt is back from the Women's Show. Arlene, you've got one last person to thank from the Women's Show.
I have one last person to thank.
We want to say thank you very much to Charles for his generous contribution in memory of his wife, Carol Jackson Kilboy, nurse, educator, wife, mother, and friend. Charles still listens to the show every week, and he appreciates what we do, and his wife loved the show. So we want to say thank you very much to both Charles and Carol for that generous contribution, and we also have just recently had an anonymous 50 come in, too.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, Charlie, thanks a lot, and we're hoping the best for you, too. I know Charlie, he's a good guy. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Bob Gray is here and Sean Canan is here. I'm Rob Lori. We're going to try to raise some money. We're going to go back to Democracy Now! In about 2 minutes. But we need to get at least one line lit. Looking above Sean's head right now, none of the phone lines are lit up. So let's see if we can get one person to call 813-238-8001. This is really a test to see whether or not we've got support for programs like Democracy Now! Today we're hearing all of Democracy Now! We had to jump it over to 11 o'clock because we weren't able to finish it in the first hour, but we are going to hear the rest of Democracy Now! In just a moment, more about the illegal immigrants, the undocumented immigrants hired by Trump Properties. And thanks to Andrew Johnson, he has made a donation from Lakeland of $15 a month.
Wow.
That's a total of $180 a year. Andrew, thank you so much for that nice contribution. That helps a lot. So that means that we need to hear from about 78 more people. 813-238-8001. That's the number to call.
Yeah, we need to hear from you. You can also donate on our secure website, which is WMNF.org. What a great Democracy Now! Show it is today. And the only way that Amy Goodman can bring you terrific shows like that is if she has a whole bunch of radio stations and TV stations that carry her work and that pay for her work, and that includes WMNF. And so we are paying the Democracy Now! Team to bring you this show, and so we have to get financial support in order to continue to bring it to you and to continue to say that it's worth it. And so that's kind of what we're asking right now. We're asking you, is it worth bringing Democracy Now! On the WMNF airwaves so that people in Tampa Bay, your neighbors and your friends and your coworkers, can hear this show, and you can hear this show, of course. And the only way that we can continue to do that is if you support it. Can you make a $10 a month donation or a $5 a month donation to support community radio and say, I'm making this donation because I think Democracy Now! Is a valuable asset to have on the air in the Tampa Bay area, and here's my $10 a month. 813-238-8001.
And you know, Sean, relatively speaking, I mean, Democracy Now! Is on a lot of TV and radio stations around the country, but there's whole pockets of the country that don't get Democracy Now!, and you're almost doing something subversive because by donating during Democracy Now! And keeping it on WMNF, all these tourists come into town from places like Jacksonville and Boston, and they come from the upper Midwest. And a lot of the cities that the tourists come from don't have Democracy Now! In their city. So they go back home, they hear Democracy Now! Because our local listeners, for the most part, have generously donated to keep it on the air. And then they go back to their cities and they call their public radio station and they say, hey, would you carry Democracy Now! And then the manager goes, what the heck is this Democracy Now! Show? And then they call up and they find out some stations then start to carry it because people heard it down here on their vacation. So what you're doing when you're supporting the show is you're helping to expand the word of Democracy Now! Amy Goodman, I think, is now on more stations overall than Rush Limbaugh is.
Wow.
So please
think of all the Canadians that come down here, right?
Yeah,
they come down here and they go back to, you know, Toronto or Ottawa or Saskatchewan or wherever, and they say, you know, not all Americans are crazy. There's actually some people down there are a little bit sane.
So keep this great show on the air and help spread the word. Call us. So we need to hear from 78 more people. Our phone number is 813-238-8001. You can also make a contribution online at WMNF.org. We just need to hear from 78 more people on Radioactivity, which is the show now. And then the Surly Feminists will be along in the next hour, and they're going to try to raise some money, too. But we need to hear from a total of 78 people between now and 1 o'clock. And, Bob, the good news is there is one caller. The bad news is that there's
nine others that aren't.
Yeah, there's more than 10 lines that are empty. So operators are standing
well,
by.
Well, I have a solution to the problem at the border, Rob.
Oh, yeah, what's up, Bob? How would you solve the problem at the border?
What I would do is I'd have Donald Trump build resorts on the border. And that way, I mean, the immigrants are already there, right?
And the undocumented immigrants are already
there. Yeah, they're already there. So, I mean, you know, what the hell? You kill two birds with one stone, and since, we end the problem at the border.
Since he likes to hire undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he wants to hire all these illegals. Why don't you just...
So instead of building a wall, Trump golf courses from
Trump
San Diego
golf
over to South Texas.
Yeah, San Diego all the way to Brownsville. Like that. That's what I'm thinking.
All right. Well, if you think that's the solution, call us up, 813-238-8001. Sean, we're going to go back. We're going to go back in 30 seconds to hear more of Democracy Now! But we have only gotten one phone call this time. We got to, you know, it really is a test to see how much support there is for the great journalism that Democracy Now! Does every day. And if you appreciate the fact that Amy Goodman finds these people, puts them on, not just for 10 seconds, but puts them on for 15 minutes or 20 minutes at a time to interview them. If you appreciate this kind of journalism, it's not happening on your local TV station. It's not happening on your cable TV news station. It's not happening on your NPR station for a half an hour, interviews with people like this. It's just not happening anywhere else but right here on Democracy Now! So please call us at 813-238-8001.
We need to hear from you right now. We're going to go back to finish out today's Democracy Now! And then catch Radioactivity. But if you support Democracy Now! Or Radioactivity or any of the great news and public affairs during this midday block, we do need to hear from you. Here's the number, 813-238-8001.
I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We just heard from Victorina Morales, an undocumented housekeeper from Guatemala who spent years making Donald Trump's bed and performing other duties at his New Jersey golf club as an undocumented immigrant. Morales has risked her own deportation to publicly accuse employees at Trump National Golf Club of breaking the law by helping undocumented employees obtain fake work papers.
We're joined now by Anibal Romero, an immigration attorney representing a number of undocumented workers at the Trump National Golf Course, including Victorina Morales. Welcome to Democracy
Thank
Now!
Thank you. Thank you
so
for having me.
So what happens now, and what are you doing?
Sure. So we have been in contact with the FBI. We have been in contact with New Jersey Attorney General's office. And New York State Authority is, they're also contacting me. I now represent 25 ex-employees of the Trump National Golf Club in four different cities. It's my understanding that employees at five golf clubs have been let go. And there's a difference between permanent employees and temporary employees. The golf season ends in November. And it's my understanding that many employees who are undocumented will not be returning to work next year.
So they were seasonal, hundreds of them, and then they returned.
That is what my clients are telling me, that at each golf club, approximately half of the staff was undocumented. And most of the people I have spoken to, I have 25 clients, but I've spoken to more than 30, say basically the way you get the job there is by someone brings you in and you're told to go purchase fraudulent documents. In some cases, they were told that if they didn't find someone, they would help them find that person to buy these fraudulent documents. And then you started working there. And this isn't something that started a couple of days ago. I've seen pay stubs as far as 2001. Many of these employees were the most trusted employees of the Trump family. Victorina Morales worked directly for the president and for Miss Ivanka Trump. In the case of two other employees, one in Hudson Valley, apparently he worked directly for Mr. Eric Trump. And I have another employee in Westchester who also had the keys to Mr. Eric Trump's house. These people had been there for over 15, 16, 17 years. And during the government shutdown, they decide to let them go because Victorina Morales spoke in December.
To the New York Times. So
yes.
Can these people be deported?
Technically, yes. However, at this point, what we are saying is that each one of them, anyone who has worked for the Trump Organization as an undocumented immigrant, is a material witness of a federal conspiracy, a multi-state federal conspiracy. And any attempt to try to remove them from the United States could be obstruction of justice.
But what do you say to, I mean, Eric Trump and others who've denied any knowledge? They say they don't know that they were undocumented. And also, why did they get them papers? Because there are a lot of undocumented people who work without having fake work papers. Why did the Trump Organization do that?
Sure. So what I would say is that my clients are saying that supervisors knew, managers knew, the general managers knew. Now, whether President Trump himself knew or Eric Trump knew, I'm not sure. I'm assuming that investigators can ask questions and we will get to the bottom of this. And why they were asking for documents, I'm not sure. I know there are a lot of undocumented immigrants who earn cash. In this case, I've seen business records. I've seen W-2s. And here's something important. When you look at these pay stubs, none of the undocumented immigrants had health insurance. And according to what they are saying is that health insurance was offered to other employees who were American citizens or legal permanent residents. And I asked a question, if none of the undocumented immigrants had health insurance or a 401k plan, why? Because they knew that they were undocumented, and undocumented immigrants are not eligible for health insurance.
And they're much more vulnerable to threats. As Victorina said, she would be threatened with deportation.
Yes. For years, she was told that she could be deported if she spoke out. And on the number of occasions, she was physically assaulted by her supervisor. My other client, Sandra Diaz, saw how other housekeepers were assaulted. They took this up to the general manager, and they decided to do nothing. And they would always say, well, this is a private golf club. No one's going to come in. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. And
Sandra Diaz also went to the State of the Union address.
Yes, we were
there.
She
has since become documented. But Victorina's applying for asylum?
Yes, she has a very compelling asylum case. We are waiting for a hearing, and we expect that she will be granted asylum, and in 1 year she will be a legal permanent resident. But there are 23 other clients who at this point are vulnerable, and they are telling me that the temporary employees are terrified that they could get deported. And they're talking about numbers in the hundreds.
And your response to Eric Trump saying, we have thousands and thousands of workers, we can't know this stuff.
Sure. Well, no, that's not the case at the golf club. The golf club roughly has about 100 employees, and what the workers are telling me, half of them were undocumented in Westchester. And I would say the same for Bedminster. I understand the organization might have thousands, but the golf clubs themselves, each one of them that operates independently, has roughly about 100 employees. So we're talking about 500 employees in five golf clubs. Half of them are undocumented, possibly, according to what clients are telling me. And we haven't heard from other golf clubs in other parts of the United States.
Congress is doing an investigation?
Yes, we were there last week. We met with members of the House. We met with the Senator Booker from New Jersey and also Senator Menendez. I believe they are circulating a letter requesting not only a thorough investigation by the FBI, Homeland Security Investigations, but also protections for these workers.
Annabelle Romero, I want to thank you for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, that's the Complete Democracy Now. You've been able to hear it here on WMNF. What an important interview that was with Annabelle Romero, the attorney for the undocumented workers at the Trump clubs. And this is 88.5 FM. Arlene Engelhardt is here to thank one more person for the Women's Show. Hey, Arlene.
Yes, we want to say a big thank you to David, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Bean of Oldsmar. He's made a very generous contribution, and he's breaking it into monthly installments, and he's taking a ball cap. So every time he goes out in the community, he'll also be letting people know what radio station he listens to. Thank you very much, David. We appreciate your contribution.
All right, that's great. And the commuter is back. Commuter, what's the word?
Yeah, we got to thank Kim Connor in Tampa. Very generous, $25 pledge. It said she didn't like Democracy Now, but it's too shrill. Says, I have lots of friends that love Democracy Now, and but Kim does love Rob Lori and his his show and all of WMNF. And Patricia Myers in Sebring, $20 pledge. So there you go.
All right, that's good. That's two more pledges. We'd hope to hear from about 60 people in the 2 hours that started at 11 o'clock, so we're getting closer to that number. 813-238-8001. If you like listening to Democracy Now! And if you like listening to Radioactivity, the new interviews and new programs that I do 5 days a week, almost every day a new topic, almost every day a new guest, sometimes two guests on a show, I really try to reach out and find writers, historians, reporters, political activists, politicians, to bring you an interesting segment every day at 11 o'clock. And if you appreciate Radioactivity, we got to hear from you, because the show is very expensive to do. I'm on the phone a lot. I'm emailing a lot. I'm reading a lot. I'm out in the community a lot, and I'm trying to get the best guests for you. and trying to be really aware of what's going on in our community and our world. And if you appreciate all the hard work that goes into the show, I just don't come in and sit down and open up the microphone. What I do is I get guests, and I try to get some of the most interesting people that perhaps you've never heard. And please call us up, support Radioactivity,
Rob,
at 813-238-8001.
Rob, I think you're the only, this is the only show on the radio in Tampa Bay that has had all of the mayoral candidates.
Five. Or six.
Yeah. Five or six people that are running for mayor. This is the show seven. Where you're going to get, I lose track.
I lose track too. But all of the mayoral candidates have been on the show, and it was a chance for you to hear them up close, so what they're thinking about issues like climate change, and also what they want to do about transportation. What do they think about the minimum wage being increased here in the Bay Area? All the important questions we asked them, and everyone got about a half an hour to be on the show.
It was really good programming. And also, this is, like I said, this is the only place on the dial that you're going to find that kind of stuff.
All right. So if you want to keep this kind of programming going, it's a way for you to touch base with some of the most interesting thinkers, politicians, activists. It's a way for you to hear all sorts of interesting people. I've had Roger Stone on, who's now at the center of the Trump-Russia investigation. I had Vice President Joe Biden on. I've also had many workers who are fighting for $15 an hour increase in the minimum wage. I've had people in the whole range in between. So it's a show that's open to everybody. I've had Republicans and Democrats and Greens and Independents on this show. So please keep this radio show going by calling 813-238-8001. We still need to hear from about 75 more people.
And Rob, we have some great thank you gifts to offer. If people want to take home a DVD for your donation, if you can contribute $100, there's a choice of DVDs that we have to offer you. We have the Michael Moore new film, Fahrenheit 11/9, for a $100 contribution. We also have the RBG documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg for a $100 donation. Or Won't You Be My Neighbor, the new film about Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. Any of those for a $100 contribution to community radio, or you can support 88.5 FM with your gift of $250 for all three of these DVDs by calling 813-238-8001 or contributing on our secure website, WMNF.org.
And Sean, a lot of people are taking those documentary films, and a lot of people are donating $250 to get all three documentary films. Well, we've got a challenge. Right now, in the next 25 minutes, if we can get five $100 contributions, we'll get an extra $500 from an anonymous person in Lake Alfred. So that challenge has just been issued. And if you can donate $100 or more in the next 25 minutes, your donation will be doubled, at least that portion of it that's $100. 813-238-8001. For a donation of $100, you can get that Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 11/9. Call us up. Please help us reach that match. We'll get an extra $500 with your help. If you donate $100, your donation will be doubled. 813-238-8001.
And I want to thank Leslie Touchton in Dade City. She is our latest member of the Circle of Friends. Says, loves the show, wants more talk about the environment and our political discussions. The degradation of the environment is real. Yes, it is, Leslie. Yeah. And if you're going to hear anything about the environment, especially as it affects Florida, you're going to hear it right here on Radioactivity.
And that was the last show I did just before the fund drive. I had two members of the Sierra Club talking about some really important environmental issues. Hey, we're going to hear about immigration right now from the perspective of the 1930s. How did immigration play into the rise of fascism? We're going to hear an interview with Hunter College professor Benjamin Hett, and Benjamin is going to tell us about the early 1930s and the parallels between the early 1930s and today in the USA. And you can have this interview that David Barsamian did for a donation of $80. Call us at 813-238-8001. We are still about 75 calls away, or 74 calls away, and there's only one person on the line. If you really care about this show, we hope that you will call us up at 813-238-8001. And if we get five $100 donations in the next 20 minutes, we will have every one of those $100 donations matched up to $500. 813-238-8001.
There were refugee and migrant flows, particularly across Germany's eastern border. So this is really where Hitler comes in, because the message that Hitler and the Nazis started to develop with great political success in the late 20s is basically, we're the party that will stop this. We're the party of, if I might put it this way, putting Germany first or making Germany great again. There are historians who tell us Hitler's what happens when you have too much democracy. And there are historians who tell us Hitler's what happens when you don't have enough democracy.
That's Benjamin Het, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Benjamin Het on how Hitler happened. The post-World War I Weimar Republic in Germany was the height of European civilization. Its scientists and scholars led the world. Its Bauhaus architecture was the rage. Its arts featured such luminaries as Fritz Lang, Bertolt Brecht, Kurt Weill, and Thomas Mann. Yet out of this modern democracy sprang Nazism, German fascism, and one of the most barbaric regimes ever. How did Hitler happen? It is one of the most important questions of history. What happened in Germany has disturbing resonances for our own time. Fascist-like regimes are taking power in many countries. We ignore disturbing signs at our peril, from torchlight parades in Charlottesville with crowds chanting, "Jews will not replace us," to a synagogue massacre in Pittsburgh, to the murder of African Americans in a church in Charleston. What can we learn from the past to ensure it doesn't happen again? Our guest today is Benjamin Het. He's the author of Burning the Reichstag, Crossing Hitler, and The Death of Democracy. He's a professor of history at Hunter College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. I talked with him in his office at Hunter College in New York. The origins of the Nazi Party, you write, the National Socialist German Workers' Party emerged from the German Workers' Party that was formed in 1919. It was a French party, you write, until the late 1920s, when it began to win significant support, first in Protestant rural areas. When Hitler took over as the party's leader in 1920, he added National Socialist to its name.
One thing this shows, I think, is the political cleverness of Hitler. The DAP, the German Workers' Party, was just another of any number of radical right-wing fringe movements that were springing up in Munich right after the war in 1919. And the DAP would have gone nowhere at all if Hitler, on one occasion when he was working as kind of a political spy for the army, hadn't wandered into one of their meetings and been incensed by a speaker who advocated Bavarian secession from Germany. And Hitler rose and poured a torrent of abuse on this man, as only Hitler could. And this impressed the heck out of the other people in the DAP. The man who had founded the DAP, a man named Anton Drexler, heard Hitler speak, and he said, that guy's got a mouth on him. We could use him. And so they tried to sort of draw Hitler into their party to be their speaker, which, of course, they succeeded at. And then about 6 months later, under Hitler's leadership, they reformulated the party as not the DAP, but the NSDAP, National Socialist German Workers' Party. That National Socialist is interesting because in conventional political terms, certainly at that time, that should have been a total oxymoron. Because national implying nationalist, on the one hand, and socialist, which is conventionally thought of as an internationalist ideology. So a national socialism should be an oxymoron. But Hitler's cleverness to see how this could be a kind of political marketing pitch, how you could basically present not actually a socialism in Marxist terms, but a kind of egalitarianism that was also nationalist, and that might be a potent electoral appeal, which it took a while to catch on, but that turned out to be right.
You write that the Nazis were able to win significant support first in Protestant rural areas. Why Protestant rural areas?
This is an interesting fact about German politics in this era, and I think this is something that's probably not really widely known. As often happens in politics, there was a constituency that could be a natural constituency for the Nazi message, and then there were other constituencies that were not. There were basically three blocks in German political society. The socialist working class bloc, there was the Catholic bloc, and then there was a slightly more amorphous group, which we might call the Protestant middle class bloc. Even when the Nazis started to do really well in electoral appeal after 1928-29, they never made really deep inroads into either the socialist working classes or the Catholic constituency, where they really not only made inroads, but basically took over this segment of the voting public, was with what we would call the Protestant middle class camp. The reasons for that go-to is what it was the Nazis were really offering. We tend to think of them now as being primarily anti-Semitic and perhaps primarily or secondarily militaristic. But neither of those notions were at the forefront of Nazi campaigning when they started to attract support. What the Nazis really were in the late 20s and early 30s, in terms of their messages to voters and in terms of which voters caught that message and responded to it, they were an anti-globalist protest movement. And this goes a long way to explaining why it is that they were able to capture Protestant votes, particularly in rural areas, because this was a time in which across the sort of north and east of Germany, the agricultural heartland, so to speak, that region was being really hit by trends in the global economy at the time, notably a dramatic drop in world grain prices, so that it was becoming very difficult to make a living farming, and rural areas were really hit by this and were experiencing a lot of poverty, which led to a lot of protest and a lot of anger at the Democratic Republic, which people thought was responsible for this situation, and a lot of anger at broader forces in the global economy and trade and so on, which seemed to be bringing this on. And the Nazis really positioned themselves as nationalists and against global trade, and they certainly positioned themselves as burningly hostile to the Democratic Republic. And it's fascinating that we see these messages really starting to resonate in these Protestant rural areas where, even before the Nazis achieved a real breakthrough in a national election, which was 1930, but already in 1928, 1929, they're starting to do a lot better in state elections by capturing this rural Protestant vote.
And you write that religious belief was a huge component of rural identity. For German Protestants, the male-centered family was the core of the social order. And then you add that the Weimar Republic concentrated in one package everything Protestants didn't like.
There's, I think, a sort of interesting parallel here to things that we're all familiar with. This is one way in which Weimar Germany looks quite familiar. There was a kind of culture war with a strong religious component. A lot of Protestants, particularly Protestants in rural areas, strongly disliked several things which seemed to be characteristic of the new era of the 1920s. They disliked the life of big cities. They disliked all of the sort of cultural things that seemed to go with that. Sexual experimentation, changes in gender roles, a sort of drift away from the church. They disliked the political prominence of the urban working classes manifested in social democratic influence in the New Republic. And also they tended to see it as too Jewish because they tended to equate, in a sort of general way, all of these modern trends to, you know, political democracy, to individual rights and so on, a lot of modern art of the time. They tended to think, well, this is all actually really Jewish. So they thought, you know, Weimar is too Jewish, it's too Catholic, it's too urban, it's too Berlin, because all of these modern things were very much centered in Berlin. And here, too, the Nazis were able to really play to that and say, you know, we're the party that's against all this. Here is where Nazi anti-Semitism, a little bit in a dog whistle form, played a role. They positioned themselves as against all the sort of modern artistic experimentation, gender experimentation, and so on that seemed to be characteristic of Berlin in that area, in that era, and that, too, tended to consolidate their support in exactly those groups where they were doing well. Anyway, the sort of Protestant rural and Protestant middle-class constituency.
And in terms of the Weimar Republic, what is its structure politically?
Yeah, so the Weimar Republic is the sort of informal name we give to the state that gets formed out of that revolution that comes at the end of World War I, where basically the Social Democrats take over. And then early in 1919, the Social Democrats had a very clear idea of what they wanted to do. They wanted to have national elections for a constituent assembly that would draft a new constitution. They had these elections in January. The Social Democrats won them in the sense that they got the biggest vote share. They didn't get a majority on their own, but with particularly two other Democratic parties, the Catholic Center and the left liberal German Democrats, these three together had a very big majority. So they created this highly democratic political system, this new constitution. And the new constitution came into effect in August 1919. It also had built into it some things which would turn out to be problematic, which the framers didn't foresee. These really revolve around the power of the presidency. So the office of the presidency was separate from the parliament, or the Reichstag. So the president was separately elected by the whole people for a different term. The parliamentary term was 4 years, the presidential term was 7 years. And very faithfully, the president was equipped with emergency powers under Article 48 of the Constitution, probably the most famous part of this Constitution, so that in an emergency, the president could do by decree pretty much anything he wanted. This created the possibility that the president might be able to function as a dictator, issuing these decrees. Now, the framers didn't think this was a problem because it didn't really occur to them that an opponent of democracy might get elected to the presidency of a democracy. I think you can't blame them for maybe not thinking that that was a possibility, for that not having occurred to them. But in fact, that's pretty much precisely what happened in 1925 when the World War I commander, Field Marshal Paul von Hindenburg, in a real squeaker of an election, got elected to the presidency. And that then created the condition where you have a man who really is someone who doesn't like the democratic system occupying the very powerful office of the presidency and with access to these emergency powers. That creates one of the ground conditions which then in a few years' time makes it possible for the democracy to really go down the drain.
Talk about the rise of Hitler, the failed push in Munich in 1923, and what class of people, if one could generalize, did the Nazi movement attract?
At the beginning, Hitler was a very, very unlikely person to follow a successful path in German politics. German politicians generally, and this is true even of people from the working class parties like the Social Democrats, they tended to be well-educated, politically thoughtful, well-read. Hitler was very much a horse of a different color. He had fought in the German army in World War I, but he had very little going for him. He had no family name, no money, you know, very little formal education behind him. What he did have, as it turned out, as we know, is a remarkable talent as a public speaker. He also had some slightly less visible talents. He had a remarkable ability to perceive what people thought and felt and wanted to hear, both on an individual basis and when dealing with crowds. He was very, very politically cunning, and he had very strong nerves. He was able to sort of wait for a moment to strike when people around him often were saying, "We've got to do something now," and he would have the sort of gambler's nerve to hold out. In terms of whom he started to appeal to, in the earlier days, from the end of World War I until his famous beer hall putsch or coup attempt in 1923, he was really a regional phenomenon. He was active in and around Munich. He started to attract a Bavarian following, largely made up of people who had been dislocated by the war, really. It was a following of war veterans who couldn't settle down to peacetime, who had a sort of urge to political nationalism, which the war had probably fostered, and a hatred of the Marxist left, and were happy to be in a situation where they could break some left-wing skulls. And then, generally speaking, those being very rough economic years in Germany, Hitler attracted a following of people who were being hurt by the post-war economic crises, and who, in various ways, either yearned for a return to the good old days or yearned for a return or a move towards some better future, but it's not the present.
Well, that's Benjamin Hett, who's a professor at Hunter College. He's the author of Burning the Reichstag, and this is an interview that David Barsamian did just a few weeks ago. You can have the entire interview about how Hitler happened for a donation of $80 to WMNF. We'll put it on CD and mail it to you, and you'll be supporting us during our fund drive. But we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. We want to get at least one donation right now. If you're a fan of Radioactivity and all the interesting interviews that we carry here on Radioactivity, we hope you'll make a $250 contribution and get all three of the documentary films that we're offering. The Michael Moore film, 11-9, also the documentary film about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice, and also the documentary about Fred Rogers, the children's TV host on PBS, Won't You Be My Neighbor? But this film is for adults. It's all about how to create a better world and living together. You can have all three documentaries on DVD for a $250 donation. As we try to raise, we're trying to raise this hour $3,000. We've raised some money, but we really haven't come close to $3,000. So we're hoping that in this break right now that you will call 813-238-8001 and help us stay on the air.
We do need to hear from you. Is this an interesting lecture for you? We would like to hear from you whether you think that this is the type of programming that you like to hear coming out of your radio. And the way you can make it continue is to support us financially with a $100 contribution or a $5 a month contribution or $10 a month by calling 813-238-8001. With your $100 donation, we can give you the gift of a DVD to take home, or we can also, for a $250 contribution, give you all three of the DVDs that Rob just mentioned. You can make a donation at WMNF.org.
And Sean, if we get five people donating at least $100 in the next few minutes, we'll get an extra $500 mm-hmm. from one of our generous listeners in Lake Alfred. Hey, thanks to Anonymous, Liz, who's somewhere out there in cyberspace, made a $100 contribution. So, Sean, we need just four more $100 contributions. Liz, thank you. She likes the show. And Hal Gillette, thank you for a $250 contribution. Hal is taking all three of the documentary films for his $250 donation. So, Sean, that means that we need to hear from just three more people and we'll get an extra $500. Here's our phone number at 813-238-8001. Trying to raise, we're hoping to hear from at least three more people donating $100 this hour, and we'll get that extra $500. That would be a huge moment here. And also, if you can donate $1,000, we'll give you a benefit pass for two, or we can give you all the news and public affairs thank you gifts if you want to make a $1,000 contribution. The commuter is here. Hey, commuter.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, I just heard Hal Gillette's name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an old buddy of mine. You know, we go way back to answering phones in the back and all that kind of good stuff. Good. Anyway, if you even think about considering me as your friend, give me a call at 813-238-8001. So.
All right, we need just three more $100 contributions. We're raising money for the Midday News and Public Affairs programs like Radioactivity. If you like Democracy Now!, Democracy Now! Didn't reach its goal this morning. We're hoping it will reach its goal. But if you like Radioactivity, which is on every day at 11 o'clock, it's a show that I do in which I search far and wide for interesting guests to bring you to talk about local topics, also state, national, and international topics. I've had everything from military veterans and military historians on to activists who are demanding a better environment or higher wages for people. I've had the union members on this show, just an incredible array of people. Please call us at 813-238-8001. That's the number to call.
Yeah, we really do need to hear from you. We have just a couple of minutes before we go up to the NPR headlines. This is the last few minutes of Radioactivity today. We need to hear your support. We're still looking for those three $100 contributions in order to meet the match. It would be great. It would be a great help if you could donate $100 right now, because it would help us to get that much closer to our goal, because we would get a $500 match if we get three more of those $100 donations. So if you would like to take home Won't You Be My Neighbor or RBG or Fahrenheit 11-9, one of those DVDs, you can call in 813-238-8001 and make your $100 donation.
And Kay Roberts in Brandon says, I know everyone works real hard and it shows. I love Rob's environmental shows. She's going to take away Fahrenheit 11-9.
All right, you're going to like that film, Kay. Thanks a lot. So, Sean, we need two more $100 donations. That's all we need. And you can make your contribution on our secure website, WMNF.org. And we are just two $100 contributions away from getting an extra $500. That'll be a big moment for this fund drive. We're also looking for that first person today to make a $1,000 donation. And we've got lots of great thank you gifts, including the story about the rise of Hitler, the interview that we were listening to just a moment ago with Professor Benjamin Hett, the author of the book Burning the Reichstag. You can have that talk or that interview on CD for an $80 contribution. 813-238-8001.
Or you can always go to WMNF.org, hit the tip jar, or you can use your app on your smartphone.
All right, so I see a line lighting up. That's good. Let's see if we can get maybe one more line. I think maybe one more donation.
That's one guy I ask if you think you're my friend. That's the one.
That's the guy?
That's the guy.
813-238-8001. We've got a lot of wonderful thank you gifts. We're still looking for that first $1,000 donation. But if we get one more $100 donation, I think we're going to get that $500. So you could be that last-minute hero here on Radioactivity. 813-238-8001.
Yeah, we still need to hear from you. We are still looking for two $100 contributions, and it starts with yours, with your contribution to the station. For $100, 813-238-8001. As Rob mentioned, we do have one person on the line, so it's possible that that person is donating $100. If that's the case, then we only need one more $100 donation. Please call 813-238-8001.